Hello, everyone. This is Peter Granich. I want to discuss Donald Trump and America's broader political divide, both of which I believe will greatly impact financial markets more than ever before. When I started in this business, my sales manager warned me that success required avoiding three topics: politics, religion, and other men's wives. I've ignored the first two more times than I can count. While I often discuss politics as it relates to markets, I do not participate in politics at home much, especially nationally, statewide, or even locally. I know some readers may find what follows unpopular or unacceptable, but at least they'll know where I stand, which is something many in the financial service industry choose or are required to keep private. Let's begin. I believe many people view Donald Trump as a great white hope. That phrase is often associated with boxing history when people search for a white challenger who could defeat a black champion. That challenger became known as the Great White Hope. Over time, the phrase became an idiom used in politics, business, and sports to describe a highly anticipated figure, often a white male, seen as capable of rescuing a struggling organization, reviving a declining industry, or winning a difficult election. For me, and I suspect many others, Trump fit that role. Early on, it seemed like he might live up to expectations, but as time went on, he failed to meet the hype, much of it created by Trump himself and those close to him, who benefited far more than those of us watching from the cheap seats. I voted for him not because I saw him as a great white hope, because I viewed him as the clear lesser of two evils. I would have rather not have voted at all than vote for Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, or the worst of all three, Kamala Harris. To me, Make America Great Again reflected both nostalgia for a past era and fear that the country's direction would only get worse. Clearly, many voters felt the same way in the last election. I suspect they also shared my view that open borders were among the most urgent concerns. On that issue, his leadership produced a much better outcome, especially compared with countries where border policies remain unchanged and conditions have greatly worsened. Unfortunately, it has mostly been downhill since then. Several factors contributed to that decline. These are the most important ones in my view. The follow-up to the immigration changes initially looked even more promising, allowing Musk and the Doge team to pursue meaningful deficit reduction and perhaps someday help reduce the national debt was heavily promoted on social media by both Trump and Musk for several weeks. But the relationship clearly fractured. I believe Musk realized, as many others in Washington have, that Trump is a spender, not a saver. Congress then passed on much of the Doge savings and rejected them elsewhere. If I spoke out on one topic more than any other in 2025, it was my belief that Trump was making a serious critical mistake that would eventually come back to bite him, and that was using a big stick instead of extending an olive branch in his trade war. Even if all our trading partners were indeed taking advantage of us, as he claimed, repeatedly threatening them and suggesting that other countries would bear the cost of the tariffs when the burden was more likely to fall here, led me to make two predictions that many challenged at the time. The first was that the tariffs would eventually be reversed and show that America paid for most of it. And two, many allies would turn against us because of how he handled the situation, and if we needed their support later, they would no longer come to our aid. The tariffs were indeed reversed. Studies showed that we paid the most of the costs, and most importantly, many former allies turned away from us. The Iranian conflict illustrated that point. Unlike the Iraqi war, where many, many countries rallied to support us, Trump received little more than lip service or actual silence. The other point that troubled me personally the most was the Epstein files. The potential crime of the century was supposedly to be fully released with the chips allowed to fall where they may. Instead, Trump stopped the release, I can only think of two possible reasons. The files would show some involvement by him, or two, others implicated in the file, either alone or along with him, convinced him to bury them. Many people feel betrayed and will soon not forget the Epstein files. The next is what Harry Truman once said. I could never lend myself to any transaction, however respectable, that would commercialize on the prestige and dignity of the office of the president. Show me a man that gets rich by being a politician, and I'll show you a crook. End quote. He was right. Trump is hardly alone, though. Many members of Congress and the Senate have grown extremely wealthy through stock market activities that ordinary investors can't or never replicate. But Trump, his family, and those close to him have reportedly made billions. Unlike presidents who avoid trading or use or use blind trust to separate themselves from their investments, Trump has maintained no such wall. We have seen hundreds of trades. While his team claims he did not personally execute them, they have not convincingly shown that he was unaware what the advisors were doing. If a client publicly praises a company, as he did, take an example of Dell, what advisor would risk not buying it and later having to explain why not? There were also questionable trades made shortly before Trump posted comments about the war on social media. The resulting profits suggest either extraordinary luck never seen before in investing or access to inside information. I would not expect a serious investigation, by the way. Trump and his family also made billions through memecoins and crypto, while many members of the public suffered heavy losses. Family members bought shares in companies that later secured major government deals, after which those stock prices rose sharply. Truman's warning still applies. The next issue. Napoleon had Waterloo. Trump now has Iran. This episode is far from over, and I believe it can become the most damaging point he ever made, one historians may view as one of the worst presidential decisions in modern history. It should and can even surpass Jimmy Carter's Iran failures in terms of poor judgment. Simply put, Trump's mistake was not starting the conflict. It was stopping it too soon and then hesitating for 10 weeks. Iran's position strengthened meanwhile with each passing week until we found ourselves back into a corner. The Islamic terror regime of Iran sees Vice President Vance's appeasement as weakness. The top IRGC commander is now openly mocking the Trump administration and threatening terrorism against America as its assets worldwide. He said, and I quote, "America should know their place and avoid confronting the Muslims. Trump is trembling. The U.S. should fear not only Hamas and Abdin, but many other locations as well." End quote. This is what happens when you signal weakness to jihadists. The Iranian regime doesn't respect diplomacy. It respects strength. Appeasement only invites more aggression and terror. America first cannot mean Iran first. Weakness is deadly. Strength is the only language they understand. Also, France just threw up a major roadblock in front of Trump's Iran deal. France official says they will not approve lifting UN sanctions on Iran until they are satisfied with a final agreement on Tehran's nuclear program. As a permanent member of the UN Security Council, France does indeed have veto power over the process. Trump may have signed the deal. That doesn't mean the rest of the world is ready to sign off on it with him. As with many of his past efforts, he began with bluster, pressure, and bravado. But this time he cannot simply declare victory and move on as if nothing happened. In fact, the allies he treated harshly now have reason to strike back, while he's still vulnerable and the situation is likely to worsen. Again, this issue is not over, and several more troubling consequences may still emerge. The bottom line on Trump, in my opinion, his enormous ego became a recurring obstacle, and his hubris was largely self-inflicted. He failed to turn skeptics into supporters, and many people who once supported him, or at least did not strongly oppose him, including someone like me, no longer trust or support him. The biggest story for 2026 and beyond isn't even written yet, and that is the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency. Stay tuned for more on that end. Meanwhile, all of this will affect the upcoming general election in November. Control of the House will likely determine how much support Trump retains, if any, and whether he might even choose to resign if it flips. If that sounds extreme, consider that a Democratic-controlled House could be far more aggressive than before, and far fewer Republicans now be willing to defend him. I could imagine him granting pardons to family members and others who profited from their connection to him, then stepping aside so Vance could pardon him. That may sound implausible, but so did the pardons connected to Biden or whoever was effectively making the decisions for Biden. Now, I truly believe America's political division has not been this severe since the period leading up to our Civil War. After Labor Day, I expect the November election period will play a bigger role as each day to the election draw closer. Hard to see how Democrats don't take back the House and how it also would be bullish for equities if they do, because it will be a war zone between the Dems and Trump. MAGA is terminally ill while the far left has grown stronger. This could be the last summer of relative peace for years to come. The videos and articles below explain why I feel this way. Please now have a most blessed Saturday.